On this Saturday night, Southern Showdown. Hillary Clinton expecting a big boost. Bernie Sanders hoping to keep it close in tonight's South Carolina Democratic primary. Both already looking ahead to all those delegates up for grabs on Super Tuesday. Is he unstoppable? As Trump soars and gets key endorsements, the battle gets uglier between Republicans fighting for political survival. Out of Cuba, another side of this country's immigration debate, as tens of thousands of Cubans are being admitted to the U.S. Some now say it's time to change the law. And Room for Rent, how $10 will get you a night inside a famous Van Gogh painting as life imitates art. Nightly news begins right now.
Decision 2016. This is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening. The polls have just closed in South Carolina's Democratic primary, and NBC News projects that Hillary Clinton will come away with an overwhelming victory in that primary over Bernie Sanders. In doing so, Clinton solidifies her front-runner status in the Democratic race for president. It was the first contest in the South for the Democrats and the first where they competed for the African-American vote. But even on this big night, Clinton and Sanders also find themselves competing for attention with the Republican candidates who have taken theatrics and drama to a new level. Our team has it all covered. First to South Carolina and NBC's Kristen Welker. Kristen?
Lester, good evening. The crowd erupted into cheers when this victory was announced. The Clinton campaign wanted a victory, and boy, did they get it. They say this will give Secretary Clinton significant momentum heading into Super Tuesday. This is an important win for a number of reasons. For one, it underscores that she has big support among African Americans. They make up more than 50% of the electorate here in South Carolina, and they make up a big portion of the electorate throughout a number of the Super Tuesday states. This is also about redemption. Secretary Clinton was trounced by then-Senator Barack Obama back in 2008. Tonight, she proved she could win back so many of those votes that she lost 8 years ago. And finally, the campaign is hoping that this win will help her to put this race out of reach, with more than half of the Democratic delegates up for grabs over the next month, many of them for the taking on Tuesday. Lester.
All right, Kristen, there's no doubt that Sanders' loss in South Carolina tonight deprives him of much-needed momentum going into Tuesday's contests. Casey Hunt is with the Sanders campaign tonight in Austin, Texas. Hello, Casey.
Lester, the Sanders campaign is absorbing a bruising defeat tonight in South Carolina. The candidate himself, not even there. He's actually about to take off for Minnesota, where he'll hold a rally later this evening. That, of course, is a Super Tuesday state. His campaign advisors telling me that they're looking ahead to those states where they think they can do well on Super Tuesday: Vermont, Massachusetts, Colorado, among them. But they're also looking farther down the line to states where they think demographics, fewer minority voters, might help them, places like Kansas and Maine later in March. No matter what, they insist that Sanders is going to be in this race all the way to the convention. Lester.
All right, Casey, let's bring in our political director and the moderator of Meet the Press, Chuck Todd. He's been looking at the exit polls for insights into today's election. What do they say, Chuck?
Well, for the first time, race mattered more than age. As we've been telling you, there had been a big age gap between Clinton and Sanders. Well, let me show you. Not tonight. On the age front, while Clinton did just as well as she's been doing in other states among voters over the age of 45, look at this. For the first time this year, she has actually won among voters under 45. Why has she won among voters under 45? Because she did so well among African Americans. Let me show you this breakdown now by race. While she lost among white voters, as she's been doing in Iowa and in New Hampshire and even in Nevada, she won overwhelmingly among African Americans. 84% of African Americans, over 60% of this electorate was African Americans, and that's why she also won on the age front. Also important inside this exit poll is the idea of continuing President Obama's policy. 70% of voters want a candidate to do that, and Clinton won among those voters, 79-21. Among those that want to see a more liberal direction, Sanders won them, but it was only among 30% of the entire electorate. And then finally, a bit of good news here for Hillary Clinton for the general election. This issue of being the of honest and trustworthy, those folks that care about this characteristic more than anything else, Sanders has been winning this throughout the primary season. But in South Carolina, he won it 54-45. In Nevada, Iowa, New Hampshire, he won those voters with over 80%. So this, again, shows you that among African-American voters, Hillary Clinton has a connection, and even on trust, she has a connection, and that's what's helped propel her to this big victory tonight, Lester.
All right, Chuck, and with new momentum after today's vote in South Carolina, let's take a closer look at what it means for Hillary Clinton going forward to Super Tuesday and beyond, and the impact on Bernie Sanders. Andrea Mitchell is in our Washington newsroom. What are your observations tonight, Andrea?
This is a very big victory for her because although this is the state that has the largest African-American vote in the Democratic primary, larger than any of the Super Tuesday states, half of those states do have large African-American votes. And by doing it with such a huge margin over Bernie Sanders, she is showing that she is speaking the language, especially of the southern states, which are so important in Super Tuesday. Bernie Sanders tried with income disparity, tried to talk about closing those economic gaps, but he didn't understand the language from the people I talked to down there, having been there on and off for the last couple of weeks. He was talking about campaign finance reform. He was talking about Wall Street. They were talking about kitchen table issues. And it's largely the African-American women who dominate the primary vote. It turns out that it could well be a larger African-American turnout than even Barack Obama had. And he beat her, Hillary Clinton, 2-1 8 years ago. This is a big victory for her. And it propels her forward on Super Tuesday to try to nail down this nomination.
All right. Andrea, thanks. For the Republicans, Donald Trump is being fed some of his own medicine, insults and taunts as his competitors struggling to gain traction are pulling out the stops to halt his momentum. As the candidates make their final push ahead of Tuesday, we get the latest from Katie Turr.
Marco Rubio is getting personal, trying to beat Trump at his own game.
He's flying around on Air Force One and tweeting.
I see him with makeup, and it's like he's putting it on with a trowel.
Which is amazing to me. That a guy with the worst spray tan in America is attacking me for putting on makeup.
Rubio's won nothing. He couldn't get elected dog catcher in Florida. They hate him in the state of Florida.
It is time to open our eyes. We cannot allow a con artist to get access to the nuclear codes of the United States of America.
The race getting dirty going into Super Tuesday, and Trump has all the momentum as he continues to lock up voter support with a campaign built around a border wall.
And who's going to pay for that wall?
The wall between the New Yorker and the Republican establishment is starting to crack, first with the Chris Christie endorsement, now with endorsements from former Arizona Governor Jan Brewer and Maine Governor Paul LePage, who only 2 weeks ago was meeting in secret with party leaders to try and stop Trump, according to the New York Times. Now on a radio talk show saying we could do a lot worse.
I think he could be one of the greatest presidents ever if he sits down and he puts together a good team.
The Kasich and Rubio campaigns are now talking about taking it all the way to the convention and contesting Trump on a second ballot.
I don't care if I have to get in my pickup truck and drive around the country like I did when I ran for the Senate. Donald Trump will never be the nominee.
Cruz, meanwhile, is trying to attack Trump from the right, questioning why he won't release his taxes.
Maybe his tax returns show that he doesn't quite have as much money as he says he does. Maybe in addition to that, last year, he wrote a big check to Planned Parenthood.
In the last month, Trump has proved that he can turn out politically varied voters from the North, the South, and the Wild West. What may have started out as a political joke in Washington is looking more and more like a political reality. As you can see, Donald Trump is on the stage in Tennessee behind me. Now, a super PAC supporting Marco Rubio is spending more than nearly $6 million blanketing Super Tuesday states with negative ads against Donald Trump. Rubio tonight also releasing his tax returns. They show that the senator made over $500,000 a year for the last 4 years that he's been in national office. Most of that money, Lester, coming from book deals.
Katie Turr, thanks. And there's much more on Super Tuesday tomorrow on Meet the Press. Chuck Todd will talk with Bernie Sanders, John Kasich, and Ted Cruz. Here in Southern California, a big collision on a freeway last night left three people dead and several in critical condition. Police say two cars were racing on the 5 freeway in the city of Commerce when one of them lost control and ran into a UPS semi-truck. The truck then hit the center median, crossed the divider, and struck several other vehicles. The truck driver was among those killed. Overseas, a temporary ceasefire went into effect today in Syria. It was a long-awaited pause in that deadly conflict between the government and rebel forces and was worked out with the help of the U.S. and Russia. It's considered a test of whether the sides are committed to broader negotiations on a political transition. Correspondent Dan Rivers is on the ground tonight in Damascus. Dan?
Lester, here in Damascus, things have been much calmer than they have been for a very long time. Yesterday we witnessed this intense aerial bombardment from jets circling the skies above the capital. Today we haven't seen or heard any aircraft, but both sides are claiming there have been some low-level breaches of this ceasefire. The Syrian army is claiming that Abbasid Square, a rather notorious square where a lot of mortar attacks have happened in the past, was again mortared at about 8 a.m. this morning. They claim in breach of this ceasefire. We went down there. We spoke to one local man who says his house was hit by mortar fire earlier this morning. And in fact, while we were there, we heard one mortar explosion going off. On the other side, the rebels claim there have been numerous breaches of the ceasefire by the Syrian government, something the Syrian government denies, but they say there has been shelling of rebel-held areas in breach of the ceasefire. But look, overall, things are still much calmer and much quieter than anyone dared to hope. The aid agencies are hoping that this will last now. It will give them a crucial opportunity, possibly, to get into some of the besieged areas and to start delivering aid to people who have been cut off for far too long. Lester?
Dan, thank you. When Nightly News continues on this Saturday, as tens of thousands of Cubans pour into the United States, the question is growing louder. Is it time to change the open-door policy? In a few weeks, President Obama makes a historic trip to Cuba. He'll be the first sitting president to visit that country since Calvin Coolidge in 1928. One issue likely to come up when the president meets with Raul Castro, the influx of Cuban migrants to American shores where they are readily accepted. But could that be changing? Mark Potter explains why the pace of migrants coming here is increasing.
Almost daily now, waves of Cuban immigrants arrive at the U.S.-Mexican border in Laredo, Texas. As many as 48,000 expected here this year. Cuban beautician Maciel Morales says she came seeking a better job, a better life. Since the U.S. and Cuba reestablished diplomatic relations, thousands of Cubans have headed for the U.S. illegally in boats and rafts. Tens of thousands through South and Central America and Mexico. Hundreds a day are flown to the U.S. border from Costa Rica, where for months they were stuck when Nicaragua sealed its border. Upon arrival, the Cubans are processed by U.S. Customs and Border Protection in just a few hours, and then receive a coveted parole stamp allowing U.S. entry. Walking out the door, they are quickly met by Cuban-American arrangers who, for a fee, provide a place to rest, then a ride to join relatives. Most head for Miami. Since the mid-1960s, during the Cold War, Cubans have enjoyed a special immigration privilege in the United States. Cubans arriving in this country, even if they are undocumented, are almost always allowed to stay, unlike other immigrants who are often detained and turned back. Central American migrants fleeing gang violence must prove their U.S. asylum claims. Many are deported.
The irony is that the Cubans are not fleeing violence. They're pure economic refugees.
Calls for an end to the protective immigration law are increasing.
There is a underlying current of frustration and tension building up as to why Cubans are given preferential treatment.
Rumors in Cuba the U.S. law could soon change convince Alejandro Galvez and many others to leave right away.
Hey, warning, come on, we need to go to the United States.
U.S. officials insist there are no current plans to change the immigration laws, but taking no chances, more and more Cubans now head for the U.S. border. Mark Potter, NBC News, Laredo, Texas.
When we come back here tonight, life imitates art. How some are spending a night in the Van Gogh's famous bedroom. Finally, tonight, it's one of the most famous bedrooms in the history of art, a series of three works by the Dutch painter Van Gogh, depicting the bedroom in his house in the south of France. The paintings are on display right now at the Art Institute of Chicago. But if seeing simply isn't enough, our Kevin Tibbles tells us that if you want, you can also spend the night.
Chicago art lovers have been lining up for their bedtime ever since Vincent Van Gogh came to town.
I could feel his presence in his painting.
The renowned and troubled Dutch artist painted three unique versions of his bedroom in the late 1880s, perhaps in an attempt to find some inner peace.
A bedroom was a very unusual subject to paint in the 19th century, but we all have bedrooms, and we all can easily identify with the bedroom.
This is really rare. In fact, it's the first time all three paintings have even been together in North America. But the folks at the Art Institute of Chicago said, why stop there?
Visitors to the online booking site Airbnb started noticing that some guy named Vincent has been renting his bedroom out for cheap. I'm charging $10 for no other reason than I need to buy paint, the ad says.
Everyone fantasizes about what it would be like to step into a painting, and now you really do have that opportunity.
It took about a month for two painters and two carpenters to meticulously recreate Van Gogh's bedroom in a Chicago condo. The 2016 bed's a little bigger than the 1888 version, and the brush and pitcher of water are glued down. But otherwise, welcome to Vince's place.
So cool.
One of the first lucky guests is Chicago photographer Kyle Buckland.
The weirdest will be like waking up in the middle of the night and I'll hop out of the bed and be like, wait a second, where exactly am I right now?
The Art Institute says the response to its post-impressionist slumber party, which ends in May, has been overwhelming.
Would you be able to leave with your ears intact?
I hope I wouldn't be chopping any appendages off.
Three rare Van Goghs in one place, an art connoisseur's dream. To sleep in his bed, sweet dreams.
I'm in a painting.
Kevin Tibbles, NBC News, Chicago.
That will do it for us on a Saturday night. I'm Lester Holt reporting from Los Angeles. For all of us at NBC News, thank you for watching and good night.